There is another reading indicated on the sheet, but I will just go to Matthew 27 and make reference as we go to Psalm 69, which does appear a number of times in this passage in Matthew. So let us just turn to Matthew 27, and perhaps to summarize the what we are dealing with here, what Jesus himself was dealing with, let us just turn to the words, to remember these words in verse 42. And particularly the second part of it, where those passing by said, "If he is the King of Israel, let him now come down from the cross, and we will believe him." We have been reading through Matthew's Gospel. And just before this, the accusations were made against Jesus. The passing of the buck, the responsibility being moved on to others, was all over. We read that the innocent man was then delivered to the crowd. The civil authorities who had the at least physical life of a man in their hands, they had permitted death to come to this one. Yet this man was claiming, as these people mocked him, he was claiming to be the Son of God. And if so, surely he was righteous, and as righteous he did not deserve death. Would he allow it to go on? To go further? And as the Son of God, surely, in the second place, he was in possession of such power that it didn't need to go on. Could he not stop it at will? Or even if he was truly the King of Israel, even in a human sense, if he was king of any kingdom, would he not have some kind of power at his disposal? Whether it was some human supporters, or in the case of the King of Israel, some heavenly support, divine appointment. I don't think that any of the people around him were holding their breath at this point. He showed no interest in putting up a fight, either physically or even in raising a defense in the courtroom. And so while the road had been decided for him, the first steps on the way to the cross had already been taken. The people around him, they just proceeded along that way. They set about doing what needed to be done. They at least felt to be appropriate. Yet, consider also that Matthew, the apostle, has recorded this. And he's recorded it with the church around him. Because I believe they perceived that there was a question remaining. Here was the one who was truly the King of the Jews, who was truly Son of God. And with all the potential that is suggested by the questions I've asked above already. And it's as though they're asking the question, the big question here, with all of that, we know who he was, with all of that, why did he do nothing? Why did this go ahead? But we also need to realize that the answer to that question is the gospel. It is the good message. So we look this morning at the powerless king. He was at the mercy of, in the first place, the uncaring soldiers, and in the second, at the mercy of the unrepentant Jews. Powerless king, at the mercy of the uncaring soldiers. He was at their mercy. He was at their disposal. He was in their hands. We read in verse 26 that Pilate, the governor, delivered Jesus to be crucified. In one sense, he delivered him to the crowd who insisted on his crucifixion. But he delivered him into the hands of the soldiers of the governor, who then drew the whole garrison, all of the soldiers, in that place around him. The death was actually to be administered by these Roman soldiers. The picture I see here is of men who understood the task given to them. They were the governor's guard. Perhaps it suggests that they were more experienced men. What would they do in a case like this? Here's a man condemned to death. What would they do? They had a job to do. But I believe that also suggests that they understood the status of this man in front of them. By that I don't mean that accusation, the king of the Jews. He had been delivered for death. As far as they were concerned, he was a dead man already. That's his status. In their hands. He'd already forfeited his life. Jesus, at this point, is in a sense a non-person from the point of view of these soldiers. And they had just what they needed, a far-fetched claim to play around with for a while until the deadline came. This man with nothing, this man with no hope left of saving life, this man going to his death, he's the one who says, "Yes, I am the King of the Jews." What an opportunity to have some fun with this one. And that's exactly what they did. A scarlet robe, symbol of royalty. At least this was their estimate of fun. Crown of thorns, never mind the pain, doesn't matter, he's going to die. A reed in his right hand as an imitation scepter, the symbol of royalty. They bowed, they could do all they liked. What did we read in that last psalm? Verse 16, these unceasingly slandered me, they mocked maliciously, like those who have no fear of God. They could do as they wished. He had no power to stop them. So they mocked him. They were cruel, they spat on him. That's a symbol of nothingness, that's their dismissal of him. They took that reed out of his hand, they struck him on the head with it. They didn't really care. What do they do to this? He's not even a man still, in their eyes. They mocked him. There was cruelty in their mockery. He was just another to pass through their hands. He, as a person, doesn't matter anymore. As though they're saying to all around them, who cares what happens to him? We don't. We'll just play for a while. Do you remember what Paul said? He wrote to the Corinthians. These men, these soldiers, are likely to have been Gentiles. And the Jews around them, they probably felt, were strange at the best of times because of their beliefs. And what about this one? What a fool he was. He's going to the cross for his foolishness simply because he said, "I am the King of the Jews." And it was Paul who said, "We preach Christ crucified, to the Greeks foolishness." That's what's in front of us here today. I'm presenting them as uncaring. Some might go so far as to say, well, what about when he when they do come out in verse 32 and following, they found a man to carry the cross for him. In verse 34, they gave him something to drink, which is usually regarded as having been a painkiller. Were they caring there? Well, who knows, perhaps there was a rough kind of kindness, but it wasn't going to last for very long. But it equally could have simply been that they were just wanting to get the job done. These could well have been things that they would have done on any such occasion. And that fits with all that goes on around this as well. In verse 38, there were two robbers crucified. It was a batch lot. Robbers quite possibly were also a term for zealots, which many people regarded Jesus as too. Someone who was ready to lead an uprising against the Roman authorities. Here were two other men included in the day's proceedings. And then you come to that section from 35, in verse 35 rather, where they took his clothes. This, as I suggested earlier, is something that they just did as a matter of course. These people hanging on the cross, they were going to die, they had nothing left in the world, let's make sure they have nothing left. Take their clothes and let's pass them around. It was part of the spoils of the event. And it would suggest to me that all of these things were simply parts of their routine that they go through. This man really was nothing special to them. In fact, worse than that. Worse than that, he was to die. No avoiding that. And worse than that, he was to die the death of the cross. They were to do the job to this man who was no longer a man. Possibly too, we come to Pilate and it was his accusation that was written over his head in verse 37. This is Jesus, the King of the Jews. Was Pilate indicating here his satisfaction? Look, there's a king on the cross, and I've done it. This King of the Jews, they've got no leader anymore. Yet another foolish effort to rise up against me and my political scene. It's been put to a stop. Jesus was going through as nothing to these people. We can observe a number of points where there are striking fulfillments of words from the Old Testament, not just words either, but events and so on. For example, where he was taken to Golgotha, the place of a skull. It was outside of the city, often thought to have been on the rubbish dump with unclean things, the rubbish was burnt and disposed of. The book of Hebrews chapter 13 picks up on this and makes the point that just so in the Old Testament the sin offerings were cast out of the camp because otherwise they would defile the camp, God's people. Here Jesus went out and he, under reproach, he went out of the city. Verse 34 does take us to remind us of Psalm 69. As I mentioned earlier, that there are several places where this psalm is recalled to mind. Zeal for your house has eaten me up, and the reproaches of those who reproach you have fallen on me. When I wept and chastened my soul with fasting, that became my reproach. He does go on to pray to the Lord in verse 13, asking the Lord to deliver him. In verse 16, hear me, O Lord, for your loving kindness is good. Turn to me according to the multitude of your tender mercies. Do not hide your face from your servant, for I am in trouble. Hear me speedily. Draw near to my soul and redeem it. Deliver me because of my enemies. You know my reproach, my shame and my dishonor. My adversaries are all before you. Reproach has broken my heart, and I am full of heaviness. I looked for someone to take pity, but there was none. And for comforters, but I found none. They also gave me gall for my food. and for my thirst they gave me vinegar to drink. Matthew notices these things, reminds us that this is the greatest fulfillment of those things that the Old Testament brings out. Verse 35 is a reference to Psalm 22. These two psalms are highly significant in this section, and these events of Jesus' life and death. Verse 38 reminds us of part of Isaiah 53, where he is numbered with the transgressors. In his death he is with the wicked. And it would be good perhaps sometimes to take some time on this and think some more on those points. But in what we're doing at the moment, the important thing is first of all to see that these indicate the place that Jesus was taking there. Those psalms are about God's anointed one. Those psalms are about God's servant. This is about how Jesus was being treated and why. This is the chief point that we must register. Those things are of interest. They should be. And they contribute to this. But the chief point we need to remember is that in the first people dealing with Jesus now on the cross, the soldiers, their task. How did they view him? Just as those psalms reflect. And Isaiah, numbered with the transgressors. Just as though he's a wicked man, worthy of death. The psalms, he's under reproach, he's cast out. But what do the soldiers think? Yes, they mock him as a king. They put up a sign as a king. But what do they think? Surely it's apparent to them he's no king. He's a dead man. He was a nothing. And all of it was foolishness. Remember what I read from 1 Corinthians 1. To the Gentiles, to the Greeks, foolishness. And also, as we read earlier in Philippians chapter 2, in verse 8, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. He was the lowest of the low. That's what the story of the soldiers tells us. The lowest of the low. How do you think about Jesus? When you hear the name of Jesus, I would hope that you do think, and you think along the terms of a confession, he is the Son of God. But never forget, on this particular day, on that occasion, those people around him who put him on the cross, they saw him as nothing and sheer foolishness. Cursed by God. And even the Gentiles regarded a crucified man as under a curse. Got that? That's Jesus on that cross. Nothing. But now you need to ask why. Yes, he is the Son of God. Why is he nothing? That's the mind that we read of in Philippians 2. But let's wait on a bit and look at some others around him. And here to take you to the unrepentant Jews. He was powerless at their mercy, at their disposal. Remember, he is an innocent man. These Jews responsible for these events, they had heard from several voices. This man is just, this man is innocent, he does not deserve to die. In those past 24 hours, they heard it several times. What did they say? One occasion they said, "What's that to us? Doesn't matter, so what if he's innocent? We're going ahead with it anyway." What did they say when the governor said he's innocent? And they said, "Well, we'll be accountable. Let's go through with it anyway. We will bear the responsibility for his death." Doesn't seem to me that they were waiting for him to call their bluff. As far as they were concerned, everything had now fallen into place. And they could say just what they always wanted to say. To his face. They slandered maliciously with no fear of God. He had no supporting crowds around him, not even any disciples around him. He was on his own. He was nailed to that cross. Oh, they were fine now, these people. I know of a number of occasions when I've seen something. For example, understand me why I do it. It might seem to be rather low-key. The Garfield movie, the cat. One occasion, he goes by the neighbor's dog, and he starts talking nasty to this dog. He gets the dog all agitated, because the dog is on a chain and can't touch him. Later on in the movie, he starts the same thing, only to discover the dog is no longer on a chain. He has to account for that. Seems to me there's something like that here. God in all his power, this Son of God in all his power, what has he done? He's not just cloaked it. He's not just obscured his glory, his power. He's tied his own hands. He's got himself nailed to that cross so that they can cast all of these ugly things, this blasphemy in his face. And he can't touch them. When a man's down, what's the right thing to do? Comfort him? Pray for him? None of the above. Mock him. Send him deeper. Isaiah 53:3 says he was despised and we did not esteem him. See what Matthew observes. And all that they were doing, what were they doing? They were blaspheming him. They'd accused him of blasphemy. They were blaspheming him. You can't blaspheme anyone but God. And see their carelessness now about the name of God. If you're the Son of God, they just trip it out. Careless, unrepentant for all that has gone before and their rejection of him. The blasphemy was in their turning against the Lord's anointed. You turn against God's anointed, you turn against God. In that blind belief that they were doing God's own work. But they had no fear of God. Truly there's something hugely painful here. This man on the cross, Jesus, he was the very one. At the end of chapter 23, we read that he mourned over Jerusalem. How he would have loved to have drawn Jerusalem in and cared for Jerusalem. And these very same people who had cast him out yet again. Their demand is that they would believe if he came down from the cross. He had urged them to believe for so long. Oh, the evil one was at work. The only way they said they would believe would break up altogether the only way open to him to save his people from their sins. He was being tempted yet again to withdraw from that one way. Because these hardest of cases said, then we would believe. My earnest prayer is that not one here in this room this morning will ever remain outside Jesus, unrepentant. You are good friends to me personally. But you may be good friends. And yet I cannot not say that if you keep him out of your life today, you are aligning yourself with these mockers, these who are challenging what Jesus is doing here. We want you to do what we want, and then we will believe. You say, I can't believe in Jesus. That's what you're saying, friend. You cannot go there. No one comes to the Father except through me, Jesus said. His way, the way that the Father had appointed for him, and that he was willing to do. I delight to do your will, O my Father, even though it means the death of curse. don't say, I will come to God if Jesus does it my way. That's what they were saying. And as long as you refuse his way, that's what you're saying. You can't do that. Don't give him pain. Don't stand in the face of his majesty. That was there. He had obscured the majesty in order to complete the task, but his majesty was there, and they were flying in the face of it. Don't do it. Because you know something? This tells us that there is something God cannot do. We all know that those few words, don't we? With God, all things are possible. But no, there are some things that are not possible with God. Unholy things. And it was not possible that Jesus should come down from the cross. What a hard choice to make in some ways. Didn't he long to draw these people to himself? Didn't he long that they would believe in him and find a way to God, his Father? And they said they would believe, but yet he could not come down. He had to go on being their stumbling block. Paul says, we preach Christ crucified, I've said already, to the Greeks foolishness. But in the middle he says, to the Jews a stumbling block. That's what we have in front of us in this passage. Jesus on the cross crucified, to the Jews a stumbling block, to the Gentiles the Greeks foolishness. These ones would not trust in the one who had succumbed to God's curse. That's the way they saw it. That was the stumbling block. And who would? That's the stumbling block for so many still today. That's the way they want to see Jesus. That's the only way they want to see Jesus. And they treat him as a stumbling block. Who would trust in him? Who does? We need to close. Asking, do you? Do you still treat him as foolishness? Do you still treat him as a stumbling block? What he's done here that we've read today. Do you trust in the one who has gone under God's curse? Because he says he did it for you. If you will trust in him. How is it for you? How is it for me? Because if he didn't, we've just exposed a little the dreadful series of events that unfolded on that day. It's dreadful, isn't it? Or have you forgotten already that he was declared innocent? But that series of events is precisely what you and I deserve. It's dreadful. One of the simplest messages of the scriptures, the Bible altogether, is that you and I need a substitute. Someone to take our place. There on the cross, as you have this word in front of you, do you have it open? This word looking up at you. It's as though Jesus is looking there on the cross, as he's on the cross, looking into your eyes and saying, will you take this? And saying, let me take that sin and that deserving that you have. He made himself powerless. Yes, on that place, on that day, he was a powerless king, but he had made himself powerless. He'd made himself foolish. He had made himself a stumbling block. One to be so badly misunderstood. But he did that for you. Won't you believe? Many of you profess that you believe. I do. You have to go on believing this. Make sure your life shows you believe this. Do you believe? We'll finish in just a moment. And I would urge you just to sit there quiet for a few minutes longer. Children, some of you do the collecting of the books afterwards. Can you not do that today, please? Seriously, I'm not just playing words here. I want you not to do that today. Let everyone take their books back. Because I want them to be able, other people to be able to sit quiet. And I'd like you to sit quiet. Think about these things for a moment. Do you understand? Can you do that for me? For your mums and dads and for everyone else? Maybe you don't feel you can sit for very long. But surely you have to. So think over these things. Jesus there on the cross looks out at you. And he says, what do you make of me? Is he powerless? Don't believe it. Don't you believe it. That was Friday. And as the old Southern gospel preacher said, that was Friday. But Sunday's coming. There you see the power that was hidden, the power that was cloaked as he rose again. But let's not forget either. Yes, Sunday was coming. But only after Friday. This was the Friday. Awful events. But done for you. Think about it. May God bless his word this morning. Let us pray together.